Welcome to the deep dive. You've carved out some time to really get into a topic, and you've sent over some material to kick us off.
Yeah, great to be diving in.
So today, our mission really is to unpack the risks, the dangers of unchecked power. And we're doing it through a Christian lens.
That's right. Using this article from Christian Culture News, it raises some really fundamental points about power, human nature, governance even.
Exactly. So let's just jump right in. The article starts strong on this core idea in Christianity, human fallibility.
Right. And it's not just saying people make mistakes. It's deeper. It suggests this idea is foundational to why there's a skepticism towards too much concentrated power.
So the idea that power corrupts isn't just like a saying.
No, the article frames it as something rooted in a theological understanding of humans.
Okay. And it links this fallibility back to things like Adam and Eve, original sin.
Precisely. The concept that we all sort of inherit this tendency to, well, to fall short ethically.
Nobody's immune. That seems to be the key point.
Absolutely. And the article brings up Romans 3.23. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It's universal.
So putting someone in charge doesn't magically fix that flaw.
Exactly. If anything, power, especially unchecked power, can actually magnify those inherent weaknesses, make the potential for error much greater.
Interesting. And then there's the contrast with Jesus's teachings, humility, servant leadership.
Right. Matthew 20.26, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. That turns the whole idea of power on its head, doesn't it?
It really does. Leadership is service, not domination.
So if that's the model, then hoarding power or wielding it without limits becomes really problematic from that Christian perspective. It's a clash.
And the article points out the Bible itself is full of examples, right? Yeah. Prophets calling out bad leaders, even heroes messing up.
Oh, definitely. It doesn't sanitize its leaders. You see their flaws, the consequences of their power getting out of hand. It's a recurring warning.
Okay, so let's look at those examples. King Saul first, Israel's first king. What's his story tell us?
Saul's interesting because he started with promise, looked the part, you know. But his downfall came from disobedience.
The Amalekites incident.
Yeah, exactly. God gave a clear command, and Saul, well, he sort of half obeyed. Speared the king, kept the best livestock. He put his own judgment, or maybe what he thought the people wanted, ahead of the instruction.
So he thought his power let him bend the rules.
It seems like it, or at least rationalize bending them. The article uses him as a prime example of how unchecked authority can lead someone, even someone chosen, away from principles.
And that cost him dearly, loss of favor, eventually the kingdom.
Right. His position didn't protect him from the consequences of ignoring those boundaries.
Then there's King David, a much more revered figure, a man after God's own heart.
Yeah, but even David, his story is maybe even more powerful because of his standing.
The Bathsheba incident, adultery, and then arranging Uriah's death.
It's brutal. He used his absolute power as king to take what he wanted and then cover it up through murder. It's a stark picture of how power can corrupt even the seemingly best among us.
Really drives home that need for accountability, doesn't it? No matter who you are.
Absolutely. Even someone deeply faithful, divinely chosen, still vulnerable. The power itself is seductive, dangerous, if there aren't limits.
And David did repent, right, when Nathan the prophet confronted him.
He did, and that's important. Shows redemption is possible.
But the damage was done.
Exactly. And it highlights how easily integrity can just dissolve when power isn't constrained. It took an outside voice, Nathan, to bring accountability.
So let's pivot slightly to that concept of original sin again. How does that specifically connect to how we should think about government, according to this perspective?
Well, if you accept the premise that everyone is inherently flawed, prone to error, prone to sin, then it follows that you can't really trust any single person or group with absolute power. It's just too risky.
Because their flaws will eventually surface and cause harm.
Precisely. The potential for messing up is baked in, you could say. So the article argues this understanding necessitates things like checks and balances in government, even in religious organizations.
It's a structural response to a theological reality.
Yeah, you could put it that way. Distribute power, make sure different parts can hold each other accountable. Because concentrated, unchecked power plus human fallibility, that's a recipe for injustice, for oppression.
And it's not just about external structures, right? The article mentioned humility, transparency.
That's key too. Leaders need to know they're fallible, act with humility, be transparent so people can see what's going on. It creates this idea of mutual oversight.
The leaders and the led kind of keeping each other honest.
Exactly. It's a shared responsibility to maintain integrity.
So original sin isn't just abstract doctrine. It's like a practical guide for setting up systems that limit harm.
I think that's a good way to see it. Mm-hmm. It pushes towards systems designed for justice and fairness based on a realistic view of human nature.
Okay, what about historically? How did Christians grapple with political power over time?
It's a really complex history, as the article notes. Concerns about power corrupting were there early on, but the Reformation was a huge turning point.
Luther, Calvin.
Right. They directly challenged the idea of absolute authority, both in the church, with the Pope, and in the state, with monarchs.
And their argument was based on this same idea of fallibility.
Very much so. They argued that everyone is fallible, including popes and kings, so no human should have unchecked power. Only God has ultimate authority.
That sounds pretty radical for the time.
It was. And it led to thinking about whether Christians could, or even should, resist tyrannical rulers or unjust laws. Early seeds of civil disobedience ideas.
The article mentioned Luther's on secular authority. What was his point there?
Luther argued for a separation, in a sense, between the spiritual and the worldly, the secular authority. But he stressed that secular government's job was to maintain order and justice, precisely to prevent the abuse of power, to ensure liberty from unaccountability.
So this thinking contributed to ideas like the separation of church and state.
It definitely played a role, not necessarily a total wall, but distinct spheres of authority, to prevent either one dominating the other. And this kind of thinking influenced broader political ideas, pushing towards more accountable, responsible forms of government, like early democratic models.
So this theological concept had real-world political consequences.
Absolutely. And the debates about how believers and leaders should respond to potential tyranny, those are still very much alive today, as the article points out.
Let's talk about stewardship. The article brings this up as another key concept. How does that fit in?
Stewardship reframes the whole idea of having authority. Instead of seeing leaders as rulers, it casts them as caretakers.
Caretakers.
Yeah, entrusted with power by God, not owning it themselves. So the responsibility isn't to dominate, but to act in the best interests of the people they lead. It's fundamentally about service.
So power is a trust, not a right.
Exactly. And with that trust comes accountability. You're accountable for how you use the resources, the influence, the power you've been given. Think of the parable of the talents, same principle. Use what you're given wisely.
Okay, that makes sense. Leadership as responsible management.
And it encourages things like wisdom, humility, qualities you want in someone managing something valuable. But crucially, it still acknowledges fallibility.
Right. Even the best steward can make mistakes.
Precisely. Which brings us back to why distributing power, having checks and balances, is still vital even within a stewardship model. No single caretaker should have absolute control.
Because they might mismanage the trust.
Or simply err due to their own limitations. So a collaborative approach, valuing different perspectives, sharing responsibility that fits the stewardship model well and guards against authoritarian tendencies.
So stewardship calls for ethical leadership and systems to mitigate the risk of that leadership failing.
Exactly. Prioritizing the community's well-being, sharing power, preventing abuse.
Okay, let's connect this more directly to today. The article really emphasizes checks and balances in modern government. How does that Christian view of fallibility provide the why behind those systems?
It's a very direct line. If humans are inherently flawed, prone to self-interest, prone to error, then giving any one person or group too much power is inherently dangerous. It's almost guaranteed to lead to abuse eventually.
So systems like separation of powers,
right.
Legislative, executive, judicial, they're like practical safeguards against our own nature.
That's a great way to put it. The article suggests these democratic structures, where branches operate independently but also hold each other accountable, actually resonate deeply with that Christian understanding. They're designed to limit the damage any one flawed individual or group can do.
It prevents tyranny by design, based on a realistic view of people.
Right. And it aligns with biblical ideas of justice, equity, and responsible stewardship.
The article also mentioned faith-based groups advocating for transparency and ethics in government.
Yes, because for many, that advocacy comes directly from these core beliefs. It's seen as a moral duty to push for systems that reflect justice and hold power accountable to the people, and for believers, ultimately accountable to God.
And encouraging civic engagement fits into that too.
Definitely. getting involved, participating in the democratic process. It's seen as a way to uphold both democratic ideals and these faith-based values of accountability and justice.
So for someone thinking religion and politics are totally separate, this shows a clear link where a religious belief informs a practical approach to political structure.
Absolutely. It argues that building checks and balances into governance is a way to live out beliefs about human dignity, protecting rights, and preventing exploitation, aligning with calls for justice and mercy.
To really hammer home the point, the article uses some pretty stark case studies. Adolf Hitler is the first one.
Yeah, I mean, Hitler is perhaps the ultimate modern example of unchecked power leading to absolute catastrophe. Totalitarian rule, WWII, the Holocaust.
Just horrific devastation.
And the article uses him to show what happens when one person's deeply flawed ideology and personality are combined with absolute, unrestrained authority. It's a terrifying lesson in why safeguards are so critical.
Then it shifts to the corporate world. Jeffrey Skilling and Enron. How does that fit?
Enron shows the same principle, unchecked power leading to disaster, but in a corporate setting. Skilling and others fostered a culture where profit trumped ethics, leading to massive fraud.
And the company collapsed, hurting countless employees and investors.
Exactly. It wasn't a political dictatorship, but it revealed huge vulnerabilities in corporate governance. A lack of real accountability, a lack of moral integrity at the top, fueled by unchecked ambition. Devastating results.
So the danger isn't limited to political leaders?
Not at all. Anywhere power is concentrated without sufficient oversight and ethical grounding, there's potential for serious harm.
The final case was Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe.
Mugabe's story is tragic because he started as, well, a liberation hero. There was so much hope.
But it didn't end well.
No. His rule became increasingly dictatorial over decades. Economic collapse, terrible human rights abuses, rampant corruption.
So his power corrupted him over time.
It seems a clear case of how absolute power allowed his flaws, his desire to cling to control, to run rampant, ultimately destroying the country he helped liberate. It illustrates that gradual decay when accountability disappears.
These examples are pretty sobering.
They really are, and they powerfully reinforce that Christian perspective. The need for humility, for accountability, for systems that prevent anyone, no matter how promising they seem initially, from wielding power without limits.
It compels societies to build those safeguards.
Absolutely. It's not pessimism. It's realism about human nature and the corrupting influence of power.
So bringing it right down to the community level, the article talks about fostering accountability within Christian communities. How can they do that practically?
Yeah, it turns the lens inward. The focus is on strengthening ethics and transparency right there. One suggestion is setting up accountability committees.
What would those look like?
Diverse groups from the congregation, not just other leaders, who provide oversight, ensure ethical guidelines are followed, give feedback, basically formalizing peer and community accountability.
So leaders aren't operating in a vacuum.
Exactly. And another big piece is transparency in decision making.
Like open meetings.
Yeah, things like open forums where leaders explain decisions, answer questions, allow for discussion. It builds trust and makes it harder for power to be misused behind closed doors. It empowers the congregation too.
And education was mentioned.
Right. Ongoing training for leaders and the congregation on ethical leadership, on accountability, all grounded in those biblical principles we've discussed. It keeps these values front and center.
So it's about building a culture where accountability is expected. It's normal.
Precisely. Proactive strategies, not just reactive ones. Mm. Building strong, transparent, morally responsible leadership that reflects those core teachings about service and humility and guards against the dangers we've seen.
Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the single biggest takeaway you think listeners should hold on to?
For me, it's how that core Christian idea of human fallibility provides such a strong logical reason for why checks and balances are non-negotiable. Everywhere.
In government, business, church.
Yes. It's a universal principle stemming from a realistic understanding of who we are.
And it's not something you set up once and forget about, is it?
No, absolutely not. It demands constant vigilance. Leaders need to stay self-aware and committed to integrity, and communities need to stay engaged in holding them accountable. The potential for power to corrupt doesn't go away.
So that need for safeguards, for oversight, it's ongoing.
It has to be.
Well, this has been really illuminating, seeing how a theological concept connects so directly to very practical questions about how we organize ourselves and manage power. Thanks for breaking it down.
My pleasure. It's always valuable to explore how these deep-seated beliefs offer frameworks for navigating complex real-world issues like leadership and ethics.
So for everyone listening, here's a thought to take away building on all this. Considering this inherent human tendency towards fallibility we've talked about, what are maybe one or two practical steps you could take, you know, in your own world, work, community, even family, to encourage a bit more accountability, a bit more ethical conduct? Something to chew on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.